To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. Find me online at MikeLuoma.com, that's MikeLuoma.com, or at GlowInTheDarkRadio.com. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, too. You can find me after there, .com/MikeLuoma, MikeLuoma. And we have a Facebook page for Glow in the Dark Radio, too, which is, you know, Facebook.com/GlowInTheDarkRadio. You can sign up for my mailing list at any of those sites, MikeLuoma.com, GlowInTheDarkRadio.com, or the Facebook page. When you join, when you sign up for the mailing list, you do get a free exclusive. It's an anthology I call The Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. It features an Alibi Jones short story you can't find anywhere else. There's also excerpts from the Vatican Assassin Index and a big chunk from the Vatican Assassin graphic novel. Plus, you get previews of a couple of the Alibi Jones comics and some very cool artwork from Federico Guillén, from the upcoming Good Samaritan, too. All kinds of stuff in the Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life, and it is an exclusive. You can only get it by joining the mailing list. So please do. The adventures of Alibi Jones continue on Glow in the Dark Radio. Alibi Jones is heading back to an abandoned old Eldred planetoid that's now supposedly off limits. He plans to pick up scientist and family friend Dr. Krish along the way. Krish wants to follow up on some curious tachyon readings he got from a body they brought back from their last visit to the abandoned planetoid. It's a hush-hush visit, this one, given that no one is supposed to land on the planetoid now. And Alibi has just lied to his Aunt Anita and his boss, who happens to be the Pope, to clear the way and keep his trip off their radar. What do the high tachyon levels Krish discovered mean? We'll start to find out, or at least get an idea, next in Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones on Glow in the Dark Radio. First, a little bit of news, book news. I've got a reading coming up this Tuesday night in Burlington, Vermont, my hometown. Geek Mountain State is getting its Vermont Science Fiction Writers reading series up and going once again. So four of us will be reading at Quarterstaff Games at 7 p.m., this coming Tuesday, June 6th, on Church Street in Burlington. That's Quarterstaff Games. It's upstairs above Earth Prime Comics. I'll be reading for around 15 minutes as part of the event, so I hope you can join us. Now, there was no podcast episode last week because I was at Balticon, and I just want to thank everybody there for inviting me once again and making it such a fun time. Did a whole bunch of panels and talked new media and science fiction, and it was a good time. Oh, I want to thank Andy Weston, too, for the first review on my new ebook, Star-Lord and the Guardians of the Galaxy, An Unofficial History, and a 5-star review at that. Even better when it comes from a cool author like Andy, too, so be sure you check out his stuff, especially if you like military science fiction and fantasy. You'd want to start with The Ninth. The Ninth. That's Andrew Weston. And again, thank you, Andy, for the 5-star review of Star-Lord and the Guardians of the Galaxy, my newest ebook. It's out now. It's $2.99 for your Kindle. It's exclusively at Amazon this time. All right, that does it for my book news. Coming up next, I've got Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We're more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. NIMLAST.org.
Now, here's Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones on Glow in the Dark Radio. Alibi clears his cruiser out of the Ceres Central port and begins winding his way through the asteroids out to a safe transpace point. He feels bad about stretching the truth with Anita and Mbeki, but he knows they wouldn't approve of yet another trip to the planetoid. I'd rather not ask. They can tell me later that I shouldn't have, he thinks out loud as he flies through the rocks. The ship's shielding brushes aside microparticles so the cruiser can move safely through the dense neighborhood of the asteroid belt. 2 hours later, it's safe to make the transpace jump. Alibi takes the ship through transpace. He's on the ground on Rigel 4 about a half an hour later, Rigel 4 having few orbital neighbors to avoid on the trip. Alibi has no problem finding a landing bay in which to keep his cruiser. The safe garrison here grants most registered safe ships easy landing rights. Alibi finds his way back to Krish's place to pick up the old scientist. Alibi, good as your word. We are not really doing this, though, are we? Well, we want to make it look like we're not doing anything. Come in for a minute. I want to do one thing before we go. He escorts Alibi into the crowded living space, and then hands him something that looks like a wand. This wand operates on a hyper-isolated basis, Krish says. We'll be able to narrowly communicate with both Rigel 4 and Cat's Eye. Cat's Eye? Why? Why do we want to do that? We'll set a course for Cat's Eye. Book it, log it. We'll check in with Rigel 4 from the transpace point all systems go, but then call Cat's Eye reporting mechanical failure. We tell them we're going back to Rigel 4. Then, no one expects us anywhere. But we'll need an isolated signal to do that discreetly. That's what this one does. Let's do it then. Sounds like a plan. Alibi and Krish make for his ship. The two head off in Alibi's cruiser for the transpace jump point. They fool their way off the grid and jump through transpace to a neutral, empty system just in case they are in some way being followed. As soon as they come out of transpace, Alibi's wand alarm begins going off. Aw, shit, don't tell me Aunt Anita found us out. Oh, says unknown source, Alibi notes, surprised.
Hello, Alibi. This is Kit, the voice on the other end purrs. I see you are coming into Cat's Eye. I will meet you there with some news.
Kit? Alibi starts. We're not... Damn. Can you send me your location code? I want to call you back on another wand. Kit sends the coordinates across the wand and signs off. Alibi transfers the code to the special wand and calls Kit back using its isolated signal. This signal is more secure, Alibi explains. We're not going to Cat's Eye, Kit. We told them we turned back to Rigel 4.
But it was only when they published your departure time and trip log on Rigel 4 that I was able to track you down. Rigel 4's port still has you listed as traveling to Cat's Eye.
That's what we told them, Alibi says.
So, where are you? Where are you going?
I'm sending you coordinates for where we are right now, Alibi tells Kit, as he does.
Received, Kit acknowledges. These coordinates are in the middle of nowhere, Kit replies, puzzled.
We're in the middle of nowhere right now, Alibi says. A temporary stopover before we go somewhere else. A return trip.
I will go with you, Kit says.
It sounds like he understands what Alibi is inferring.
Programming coordinates for transpace now. I should be at your location soon. Kit out.
Alibi moves the cruiser away from the actual transpace coordinates he just sent over. He and Krish watch through the cruiser's main view screen as the stars seem to ripple and fade. A pinpoint of light grows to become a Dakor ship, zooming in from transpace, suddenly surging in out of nothing and nowhere to appear right next to Alibi's cruiser. The Dakor ship is a small personal transport, large enough to carry 4 large beings, but with no cargo capacity by the look of it. A docking collar extends off from the side of the ship around its airlock door.
Alibi, I am going to dock with your cruiser, Kit says over the comm.
Go ahead, Kit. I can see the docking collar extending. It looks good to go. We won't move, I promise.
Kit's ship lines up alongside. Its docking collar connects to the cruiser magnetically, snapping into place.
After a minute, Alibi hears the cruiser's airlock door begin to cycle open. Kit soon joins them on the bridge.
You are going back to the planetoid?
Kit asks, first thing.
We are, Alibi confirms.
It is now off limits. You are aware of this? Both Krish and Alibi nod. All right, but listen to my information first, and you may not need to go back to that planetoid, Kit tells him.
Really? Well, I'm curious. What information is that?
Thanks to reports I came across back on Her, I have found another planet where Eldred have been spotted recently, a world called Deraminar. It is quite a distance from here. It lies in the old Eldred expanse, in the now unclaimed systems between Dakur space and the Tekta. It is in a sort of limbo, similar to our planetoid between Tekta and human space in the old Eldred worlds. Would you not agree?
Alibi and Krish nod. Sounds very similar, Alibi grants him.
Deraminar is under no jurisdiction right now. Not Dakur, not Tekta. Until recently, this had not been an issue. The world was like so many other dead Eldred worlds, deadly poison to any who ventured to land. We Dakur believe that when the Eldred race died, a toxin was released into the atmosphere, by will or by accident.
Typical, Alibi says. I still don't understand why they felt they had to kill their worlds as they died out.
Control, Krish offers. Even in death, their race desired control, he explains. The only way they could control their worlds after they were gone was to make sure that no one else could land on them.
Bastards, Alibi sneers.
The Eldred were obsessed by control, Kit admits. The highly contagious viral toxin with which they flooded the atmosphere of Deraminar was impossible to remove from materials with which it came in contact. Our safety suits could not be worn safely. One might be safe inside the suit while one was on the planet, but even after one left Deraminar, there was no way to remove the toxin from the exterior of one's suit without suffering contamination and rapid death, Kit tells them.
Nice, Alibi cracks.
Deraminar was marked as a death trap and left alone for the last 23 years. Now we have reports of activity in the system. Unknown ships sighted landing on Deraminar. Our probes sent into the atmosphere, when not destroyed, show that the toxin has disappeared, perhaps dissipated or gone dormant, Kit says. But most of our probes have been destroyed before we can take complete atmospheric readings. Someone or something is shooting them down.
Oh, really? Alibi says with new interest.
Really? Kit confirms. I volunteered to investigate and discovered the Eldred were there. I was chased off the planet soon after spotting them, but make no mistake, it was them. The same small furry race of killer koalas from outer space, as you once called them, Alibi.
I called them that before I had to fight them. There's nothing cute about the Eldred now, Alibi says.
There's never been anything cute about the Eldred, except their outward appearance, Krish notes.
But, he grows concerned, before we look into the Eldred on Deraminar, we need to go back to Masakov's planetoid, correct? That is still the plan, is it not? I'm setting course for the planetoid, Alibi announces. He punches in the transpace point and sets the ship to jump. If we don't find anything on the planetoid, we can go to Deraminar next.
We are not just going there looking for Eldred, Krish tells Kit.
You may not be, Kit says to Krish. He nods at Alibi. But he is.
Still, Alibi. Is that why you really want to go back?
I want to prove what I know to be true, Alibi says. I want people to believe me when I tell them the Eldred are back, so we can deal with the question of why they're back, and why they're working with the Tekta.
I don't think we'll find anything to help your case on that planetoid, Krish says to Alibi. The Tekta, or whoever cleaned that place out, want to keep the current existence of the Eldred a secret. I don't think they've left anything behind for you to discover.
Well, if I may ask, then, Kit inquires of Krish, why are you going?
Tachyons, Krish declares. I found many tachyon particles on and around Masakov's body.
I do not know that word, Kit replies.
Well, let's see. Tachyons aren't actually particles, they're strings, because if they were particles, they wouldn't exist. Has to do with negative mass squared, imaginary mass, and...
Krish trails off.
It is hard to explain without writing down the equations.
I do not know that I would understand your equations, Kit says.
Right, Krish agrees. Let me see. We've been able to detect them since we discovered we were actually creating them, as we looked for them in the future. Then we figured out how to compensate for that, so we could detect tachyons we weren't creating, and we found them. Because these things move faster than light, they move outside of time. in both directions. At least, the ones we detect seem to. But we've only been able to create ones that move forward into the future.
These tachyons travel through time? Kit asks.
They seem to, Krish says. So, could somebody hitch a ride on them? Use them to travel through time? Alibi asks. Sounds pretty far-fetched.
That is because it is far-fetched, Krish says. You would have to find a way to attach yourself to something that has no actual mass in our three dimensions. And then you would need a whole lot of them. So far, we cannot produce very many, and not all at once.
So, you wish to check for tachyons on the planetoid? Kit asks him.
I do. After we brought Mazakov's body back, I started testing the body for various elements. For some reason, I decided to check for tachyons. He was loaded with them, all moving into the future, in concentrations and numbers like we never see, Krish says, getting excited in the telling.
The only other concentrations we have seen like that have appeared in deep space, seemingly random clouds of tachyons. This is the first time we've seen a body soaking in them.
Do you think he was attempting to move through time? Kit asks Krish.
He did flail a lot, Alibi notes. Maybe, Krish answers Kit. But maybe not his body. If Mazakov had some way to isolate his bioelectrical energy matrix, he might have... Well, it just seems unlikely. We can see he didn't go anywhere. And the effort killed him.
The flailing, right? Alibi jokes. And the lesson we learned from the story is, kids, don't play with tachyons.
We'll measure and see what the levels look like down there, where you two saw that machine of his, Krish explains.
Perhaps we should take my craft to the planetoid. It is smaller, Kit notes.
Can't, Krish says. The tachyon detector is very large. Not truly portable, actually. It's in the cargo bay. We'll have to land the ship next to where we want to use it, he explains.
Very well. I will leave my craft here, then, and travel with you. I will secure my ship and unlock the docking collar momentarily, Kit tells them.
He leaves to go back to his ship. He's back on the bridge within the half hour.
I must disengage my ship, Kit tells them.
He sits down in the co-pilot's seat and runs through commands that set his ship free to float away from the cruiser.
I suppose that it is safe to leave it here, seeing that this is nowhere, Kit says.
Should be, Alibi agrees.
How will we get past the Sentinel satellite? Kit asks, turning back to the matter at hand.
He designed them, Alibi tells Kit, nodding at Krish, who's smiling proudly. He tells me that's not going to be a problem.
I built a backdoor redundancy into them, in case I ever needed it, Krish explains. It's something we engineers do, build in backdoors, just in cases. In this case, it's a trigger that will feed a repeat of the events of 24 hours prior from the platform's memory instead of the live feed. It syncs back up to live after 24 hours, a brief day's hiccup, where we can slip in and out unseen, because all those watching the platform's feed see yesterday's footage.
That's pretty cool, Alibi comments.
You seem to be somewhat of an evil genius, Dr. Krish, Kit purrs.
Thank you, I think, Krish says.
The three of them prep for the landing. Alibi launches the ship through transpace using slightly altered end coordinates. They're attempting to come out of transpace far enough away from the planetoid for Krish to make them invisible. He's been readying codes while they travel. As they emerge from transpace, he begins firing them off through the ship's comm.
Done! Now they are getting yesterday's news, Krish jokes, where nothing is happening.
Alibi brings the cruiser down towards the surface. The underground hangar is now open and empty. Alibi lowers the cruiser down into the cavern, landing next to the former location of Masakov's machine. He and Kit open the cargo bay and assist Krish with the placement of sensors for the tachyon detector. Once Krish is set with his equipment, Alibi leaves the underground hangar to jog across the surface, trying to spot fresh Eldred bodies. He checks the grim pile of corpses. There's nothing new. He searches the area between the underground hangar and the lab building, and then finds himself walking through the empty lab building. As he approaches the place where the large man was chained to the wall, he again feels something strange, as if he's feeling echoes instead of hearing them. Deep, individual, stretched-out laughs, echoing through him every few seconds. He walks over to the wall. With no threat from Tekta fighters overhead, he can relax and see if he can get some kind of mental impression from the wall. He stretches his arms ahead, gloved palms facing outward. Echoes pulse through him faster now. He touches the wall and feels an electric shock. He leans in against the wall, and images begin appearing in his mind. The echoing, pulsing laughter gets faster. He can both hear and feel it. He closes his eyes and sees himself, then Piccolo, and then Kit coming after him through a blue haze. Alibi realizes he is Masakov. Then all is pain. The world glows bright gold, then white. Darkness then descends. Until he blinks his eyes. At least he thinks he's blinking his eyes. Alibi can't tell if he is blinking his own eyes, or if he's seeing someone else's memories of blinking their eyes. He stands up straight and finds he's pulling away from the wall. Laughter continues to echo. Is he laughing? Is it him? The memory impression is so strong. He feels himself pulling away from the wall, pulling off the manacles as if they were made of paper. Or is it him? He's looking at hands now too large, down at feet now too big, and he laughs, and the laughter stops. The echo fades fast. Alibi finds himself standing alone in the empty lab building, trying to make sense out of what he just saw. He wanders outside of the lab building, still shaken by the powerful mental impression. Without thinking, he wanders back to the pile of bodies. There's been no sign of any new Eldred bodies. The pile is covered by recently killed human bodies. Alibi contemplates digging down into the pile to see if there are new Eldred bodies hidden underneath other corpses. Then a disturbing thought screams into his consciousness. Miss K is probably somewhere on this pile. No, not her. Just her body. Miss K is gone. Standing there, thinking, letting his eyes lose focus, letting the grim sight before him blur into indistinct globs, Alibi finds he does not have the stomach to lift the bodies from off the pile to satisfy his curiosity. There may be fresh Eldred killed underneath, but it's not worth the trauma to discover whether or not he's right. He stares at the pile, lost in thought, numb. You should stop looking at that, Kit says in his ear, over the comm. Alibi sees him standing a few meters away. Thanks, Alibi says. I was kind of zoning out.
Perhaps part of your mind shut down in the face of so much carnage, Kit offers.
No, my mind is anything but shut down, Alibi tells him. Feel like I'm thinking too much.
I do not think that is possible, Kit comments.
He changes the subject.
Let us return to the ship. Krish reports his work is nearly done.
Alibi takes his time walking back to the cruiser. Kit measures his pace to walk alongside his friend. Krish waves when he spots them approaching. Alibi! Krish shouts in his ear over the comm. Krish, you're on the comm. Don't shout, you don't need to.
I am sorry, he says more softly. I am just excited. The tachyon readings are way off our charts. I cannot even measure them with my equipment. They are beyond anything we've ever seen before.
Really? Alibi thinks for a moment. Can we measure a spot in the lab too, Krish? Krish looks puzzled behind his faceplate.
If you can land the ship next to it. We could measure the spot from outside of the building,
Krish says, thinking on his feet.
But the sensors won't go all the way into and around inside the building. Outside is the best we can do.
Okay, Alibi decides. Let's try it.
We must pack up here first,
Krish cautions. The three of them pitch in to pack up. Alibi then flies the cruiser up and out of the hangar, skimming over the surface to the lab building. Alibi lands the cruiser as close to the building as he can, estimating where the shackles were on the inside wall. Kit and Alibi once again help Krish unpack and place the sensors. Krish turns on his sensors again, as Alibi and Kit look on, waiting.
Isn't that something?
Krish says, once the sensors have finished taking their readings.
Even from out here, the tachyon readings are incredibly high. How did you know?
Krish asks Alibi. I got an impression from the wall inside there, Alibi tells them, nodding at the lab as they once again pack up the gear. As if I could see Masakov's memory. Except I didn't stay Masakov. I became the big drooling guy, chained to the other side of this wall, I think. And I was laughing the whole time, sort of.
Could he have switched bodies? Masakov? I don't know.
Well, you were talking about him maybe being able to move his biorhythms through time or something, Alibi explains himself. I was just thinking, wondering, really, if he could do that in a small way and switch into another body. A bigger, badder, stronger body, too, by the way.
I was calling it his bioelectrical energy matrix, Krish says. I meant his essence, as encompassed by all of his energies. Somehow, held together and moved through time. It is highly unlikely, very theoretical.
Yes, Kit observes, but so are those tachyon readings you have been getting, correct?
Correct. I guess we are in the realm of the unlikely, aren't we? Krish admits.
Katie said he called himself Ashometh, not Masakov. Perhaps this was not the first time he has done this.
You mean whoever Ashometh is or was, he did this before? And what, landed in Masakov?
Oh, I don't like this,
Krish says. He starts looking around, as if in panic.
No, this is bad, he says in a rushed, hushed voice. Very, very, very bad.
Do you think it is likely? Kit asks Alibi. Do you think he can travel through time?
Oh, no. No, this can't be,
Krish is mumbling. Sounds as plausible as anything else we're discussing here, Alibi says. But who is he? Where's he from?
More apropos to ask, when is he from, is it not? Kit observes.
Oh, I think we know when,
Krish says, suddenly loud and clear. He has a crazy look in his eyes.
When?
Both Alibi and Kit ask at the same time.
We have found huge lingering clouds of tachyons massed in deep space, Krish says. We thought they were naturally occurring phenomenon, even classified them that way. But those readings were very similar to these we've taken today.
Krish scratches his head.
The same way these readings blow away the ability of my equipment to measure them accurately. Those readings dwarf these we've taken here and now. That would make them, quite possibly, the residue of a huge leap forward in time. The amount that can be moved would seem to be limited, so any extra energy poured into the creation of tachyons would extend the string's reach. In this case, they reach into the future.
So, those huge clouds of tachyons you found could mean someone moved far into the future? I mean, into our time, their future, from a very long time ago? I don't think I like where you're going with this, Dr. Krish, Alibi says.
I do not like where this has already gone, Alibi, Krish says, shaking his helmeted head. The energies we've measured, we're easily talking hundreds of thousands of years, Krish says. And yes, quite probably a million.
You are saying it is possible this Ashometh came forward in time a million years and took over Masakov?
Kit asks for clarification.
Entirely possible, Krish admits. However unlikely.
Huh. Alibi grunts in surprise at a surfacing memory. I remember something Masakov said to me. It was weird. He had been lisping and slurring his words, but then for a second he spoke clearly. He said, "Sometimes I am still I." It didn't make sense at the time.
Sounds like you heard the real Masakov, Krish says, if only for a moment. A moment when he wasn't possessed by one of them. One of the ancient enemy.
The words hang in the quiet space between them. No one speaks for a moment. We should get out of here. Alibi breaks the silence. If what we think is true, Alibi trails off. There's one of them out there. Aunt Anita was right, even though she didn't want to be, and even though I don't want her to be right.
It is too bad the trail ends here, Krish laments.
I believe we do know where he has gone,
Kit tells them.
We will find this ancient enemy where we find his servants. Where we find the Eldred, I believe we will find this Ashometh. Onderaminar.
I don't think I'll be making that trip with you, Krish tells them. Can you bring me back to Rigel 4? I want to examine the sensor readings, to double check, and see if they really mean what I'm afraid they do.
That's fine with me, Krish, Alibi says. It'll give me a chance to resupply the cruiser. They pack up the sensor equipment in solemn silence, and leave the planet. Alibi checks the ship's sensor array as they tack toward the transspace jump point. Nothing shows up on his screens. Seems they've made this visit undetected. They jump back to the middle of nowhere, so Kit can board his Dakur spacecraft, and the two ships jump together, back to Rigel 4. Along the way, they concoct a story about Kit finding Alibi's cruiser after the engines gave Alibi trouble. It's plausible enough that it satisfies the curiosity of the safe garrison communications officer, who clears them to land. Krish arranges for dock workers to offload the tachyon detector from the cruiser and deliver it back to the project installation on Rigel 4. Alibi and Kit see Krish safely back to his home.
I plan to begin examining the data we gathered immediately, Krish says, as Kit and Alibi prepare to leave. I will call your wand as soon as I have something conclusive.
Hell, Krish, call me if you get anything, Alibi tells him.
He smiles at the old man. You know, you've been quite the planet hopper for a crotchety old fart.
Watch what you're calling an old fart,
Krish says in mock protest.
You should remember, I was traveling to other worlds before most of the human race even knew they were out there.
See? Like I said, you're old, Alibi cracks back.
Get out of here,
Krish says, waving them out of his crowded front room.
You two tell me if you find anything on Dereminar.
You hear? We will, Krish, Alibi assures him.
We will,
Kit agrees. Alibi smiles at the scientist. He and Kit leave, heading back to the port and their ships.
Are you ready to take on Ashumeth and the Eldred again? Kit asks Alibi, as they check in with the Safe Port Authority on Rigel 4.
Alibi is filing a flight plan for Dereminar, figuring no one on Rigel 4 knows where it is.
I don't know, Alibi replies. Guess so. You?
I do not know either, Kit admits. Perhaps being ready for them does not matter.
Alibi laughs.
What is funny about this?
Kit asks him, perplexed. We're worried about creatures most people don't think exist anymore. It just struck me that folks would think we're deathly afraid of imaginary monsters. It made me chuckle, he tells Kit.
I do not see the humor.
Well, if we can prove they exist, no one will be laughing, Alibi says, darkening. Alibi finishes up with the Port Authority. Kit arranges to leave his ship on Rigel 4. The two board Alibi's cruiser and are soon jumping through transpace, bound for Dereminar.
That was Chapter 17 of Alibi Jones on Glow in the Dark Radio. Did the ancient enemy discover time travel? It sure is beginning to look like they did. Join Alibi Jones next time on Glow in the Dark Radio and discover the truth, along with Alibi and his friends. And if the ancient enemy did discover time travel, what are the ramifications? Guess you'll have to keep listening and find out. At least I hope you will. Just a reminder, before I finish and wrap things up, I will be doing a reading in Burlington, Vermont this coming Tuesday night. It's at Quarterstaff Games on Church Street across from City Hall. That'll be at 7 p.m. It's part of the Geek Mountain State Vermont Science Fiction Writers Reading Series. You can find out more at geekmountainstate.com or on Facebook. Again, that's at 7 p.m. in Burlington, Vermont at Quarterstaff Games this coming Tuesday night, June 6th. And that does it for this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.